Yeah, how was coming back from the Builder 100, Kevin?
It was, well, coming back, it's never fun coming back from the West Coast. I imagine that's how you all feel when you fly east, but losing a whole day essentially isn't fun. I left at 10 a.m., got home at 10 p.m.
Ew.
But I love plane time. Do you all like plane time? Time
Depends.
on the plane?
Depends if my kids are there. I don't
Well,
like
what does that make you
airport
like it
time.
more or
I
less?
dislike it because you're just
Well,
kind of
yeah.
getting, you, there's no relaxing. It's just a high stress environment. But yeah, when
Yeah.
I'm by myself, it is pleasant and I feel like I can focus and
Like, I don't have to be in first class or have, like, as long as I have a window seat and I can just close out the world, I love it. I'm productive. I catch up on all the content that I want to read or listen to. Maybe take a nap. It's just
whatever
delightful.
you eat doesn't count when you're in an airport traveling like
That's
that. It's
true.
not real.
That's true. At least until once you're 40, it starts counting still. So I did have to go down to the 1 gram of sugar gummies from the tip. But no, the event was great. I'll talk about it in my spare time in a little more detail. But it's one of the best places to hold a conference in the world. They did such a good job of picking that venue, the Ritz-Carlton. I didn't stay at the Ritz-Carlton this year because to stay 5 minutes away or 10 minutes away for 3 nights was the same as one night. By the time I got around to booking. So this year, I would say the main things were AI, which that's to be expected at any event. But I'll tell you this, and I this is a good, perfect clarification because it's not really what I want to talk about later necessarily, but I put on X this statement that here's one of my main takeaways leaving the event was that the gap between those who work on their craft every day and know their stuff and those who repeat and say things they don't really understand has never been wider. And I meant that from like conversations in the audience primarily, a little bit on the stage, but mostly just CEOs and high-level leaders who would be like, they would think they heard what the person on stage was saying. But then when they were talking back to me, it was like, no, you didn't. You like heard 10% of it and then raced off in the direction of, so it must mean this, and stopped listening at some point, clearly. Like the first person to talk about AI, her one of her main points was the reputational damage of doing this wrong is hard to know, but it's gonna be big. And she used the example of OpenAI and Google. It's like Google had been doing, like, they invented large language models, and they invented a lot of the stuff that OpenAI ultimately used with their team. But the risk of launching to the world and it saying racist or evil things or wrong things would have been a huge reputational hit for Google. Whereas if it didn't work at OpenAI, it'd be like, well, what's the name of that company? I don't know, open something, and we just would have all moved on, and they would have tried again later. So then when you talk to a CEO right after that session, they're like, well, I guess we better like go all in and just maybe even let some people go and just start turning all this stuff on. And it's like, I don't think you heard the whole session. But they say it with such confidence, and maybe that's what all CEOs do. That was wild. That was wild. All right, let's get started. Welcome to Market Proof Marketing, the podcast from the industry leaders at Do You Convert, where we talk about the current and future state of marketing and online sales for builders and developers across the globe. We're not here to sell you, we're here to help you and to try and elevate the conversation. Is there a topic you'd like us to cover or a question you'd like us to answer? We'll do it. Simply send an email to show@doyouconvert.com. Welcome to episode 336. I'm Kevin Oakley, and with me today is Jackie Lipinski and Julie Jarnigan.
Hello.
Like I haven't been here for a little while. This feels fun to be back. I don't know
I
where I've
know.
been. I
Where have you been? What have you been
don't
doing?
know.
You're still in
We have
Louisiana?
like a lot of guest episodes
I
and
don't know how the
things
schedule
happening.
works. I just show up when they tell
Oh,
me
that's right.
to.
We had the live, then we had a guest episode, then Olivia was in Italy and other amazing places that I love how she's slow posting, like to increase the amount of jealousy that the world has. It's like you can't drop it all. Yeah, and again, I get it. You went and did a lot of things, so you gotta, she's just like,
She's
it.
succeeding.
All
We
right, Julie. Well, then let's let you start story time.
Oh, okay. So my church every year does big serve day, like once a year. It's a huge church-wide thing. And my kids are now 10 and 15. So we're like, that would be a good thing for us to do as a family to kind of, you know, get them off the couch on a Saturday morning, go do something for somebody. You sign up for wherever you want to serve. So we signed up at one of the schools where my youngest goes to school. But they have you, we've never done it before. They have you show up at the church before and they give everybody a red t-shirt and they have a little rally. And I think my takeaway was there's so much power in like creating that group of people and you seeing it and everybody's in their red shirt. And I was like, there's like a marketing lesson here. And now then all the content comes out of the drone shot of all the people. Mm-hmm. And then they go out. It would have been easier just to send everybody out to their location and then somebody tell them what they're going to do when they got there. But that building of excitement and feeling a part of something, and my kids were excited and wanted to go do it and were so proud to be there. I think sometimes when we're like so focused on one house and one customer putting it together, we missed that like crowd excitement. And there were a million examples I thought of in home building. Your pre-sale without fail is a good one. The people who would do the testimonial pages and just add every single, why don't we get a photo of every single home buyer when they close and add it on there? There's just so many like examples of way we miss the mark on that big sense of belonging community emotion.
Yeah. So it's important. And the visual element, as silly as it sounds, of everyone wearing the same shirt.
Yeah.
One of the sayings, when we take people down to Guatemala is, you know, what your eyes affect your heart and your heart affects your head. And so just the visualness of that, I even shared, I know with all the coaches here, do you convert the image of the Coke can that has no red in it? And it's like, that's how strong your eyes are, is they're telling you that there's this color in the image that you don't see.
Yeah. And it was funny. We didn't know what we were going to be doing. We just signed up for a school and we got there and they said, here's this boys' bathroom, paint it this dark blue and just hand us like some random supplies. And it was the student council of a middle school that were also there. And so every once in a while, like five middle schoolers would come in, grab paintbrushes, make a huge mess that you would have to clean up. But you didn't want to dampen their little spirits. So you just let them. You clean up after them. And so when I was like, what should I do my story time on? Beth was like, you should do the kids and painting the stall bathrooms with you. And I said, can I compare them to the problem on-site salespeople? But we love you salespeople. I'm just joking, but it was a fun day, but that it is powerful to see everybody there together. And I think we could capture that somehow.
And I love that if they go away with the shirts too, like, and it's has little paint splatters, like that's going to be a memory for them. And there's something about like people holding on to those branded items for an awkwardly long time. And also if you associate like, oh, Julie Jarnigan's a great person, you wear that shirt out, it's going to also be a conversation, and it's a conversation starter. So don't like underestimate, like, you know, a marketer or a team could have easily been like, that costs a little too much to have that little elevated experience, not worth it. And there are like those minuscule moments, like you're saying, that really elevate. You know, we can do the foundational, but then there's like the touches of the heart and the human that come away. So
yeah, this always, I feel like I'm being overly sappy when I say this, but things like we talk about, like what's real or how important data and metrics are, the most important things don't have a metric associated with it. Like there is no love meter, and yet love is a real thing. And probably the most important thing that we experience in our lives. And yet there's no number. Yeah. There's no scale. It's just this thing. So the stuff that can't be tracked doesn't mean it's not important. You know, there's this story of like what gets measured is important. What you can't manage, what you can't measure. All that's true, but there's some things that can't be measured that are still important.
Yeah.
And differentiated too. Like when you think about one builder versus another, it's often those things that cannot be measured in the same.
And that kind of leads my story time, which I thought was funny because like, I was like, I'm going to go to this grand model home event. There's I think there were 18 model homes, like 9 builders. I'm going to have a lot of feedback regarding like how I was followed up. And then my biggest thing was, wow, it smells really great. Like, and that was the weirdest thing. I was like, I'm just going to post about how good this model home smelled that made me stop and ask the lady, like, what is this? Cause I've only had that experience once and I was in a hotel in Hawaii and it was white tea. And I was like, it was my birthday. I was like, I stopped the lady at the front. I was like, what is this? I need this in my life. This is the moment I'm going to remember, like, to bring me back to this. And so my favorite model home, I walked through, I stopped the lady as well at this event. I was like, what is that smell? And she's like, yeah, it's branded. We put in all our model homes. We want to make sure the experience is there consistently. And it's funny. I've told that story to a few marketers and some are like, yeah, we still bake cookies, or, oh, we also do that. Or, oh, we're just getting on that train for that thinking about those little details. So I did like that, but I will still, my real story time was going to be about, even though I felt like I went through the best model home experience, they did not ask me for my contact information. Mm. They handed me a card and they said, contact me when you're ready. And I went, I'm here. I'm ready. So what do you need from me? And I've only gotten one follow up phone call from, I would say, one of the smaller builders too there. So don't underestimate, even if you're up against the big guys.
How many people were out and about when you went to this event?
It was really rainy. Busy? It was, I would say mildly busy.
So we can't give the excuse of everyone was overwhelmed with traffic. And so they didn't really have a choice, or they didn't have a digital registration option, or.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, no, the amount of paper wrote things I was asked to fill out and hand it was crazy. No one was ready to go with a keyboard. The one weird way that someone did get my contact information, but I also was not followed up with them, was they offered a photo booth where you have to enter in your phone number to get the picture. And I was like, okay, that's a subtle way. And still they have not reached out to me. Like,
I mean, it is that is subtle.
That's implied and consent.
Maybe even smart, but when you hand that list to a salesperson, like, what are they going to say? These aren't real people. They just wanted to get their photo. And so this is where perception becomes reality, and perception is important. And this goes back a little bit to the not necessarily visual element, but you do have to find ways. I think back to Sarah Williams, who was our first online salesperson way back, I think it was 2007. And when she started in that role with us at Heartland, and there was one particular salesperson every time she scheduled an appointment, she had to call him. Not an efficient process to have to call a salesperson every time you schedule an appointment. I think it drove Mike nuts, but she had to like get him excited. She's like, hey, I just talked to this person and they are so excited and you should be excited. And here's all about them. Because if she wrote it down in an email or put it on the calendar invite or in the CRM, he was so boring of an individual that she had to like charge him up over the phone. It was like a quasi sales manager, online salesperson role that she had. But that doesn't mean, again, it's not real and that you don't have to do that. And if it does generate sales, you can always try to find a way to do that more efficiently, but you do have to give salespeople the signal. Now, the other extreme of that is a builder a couple of years ago, they ran out of budget halfway through the year. And so all they did the rest of the year was Facebook lead ads, and they removed any source of lead information because they didn't want anyone curb qualifying the lead and saying, well, this isn't someone serious because they came from Facebook. So you can't just give no information. Mm-hmm. It is a balancing thing.
Yeah.
A couple of questions about the smell. First of all, I remember being told, because I did this also at Heartland. I'm that old guy who says, yeah, we did that before. I know. Yeah. But we just used Glade plugins and we gave them to the cleaners and said, in the kitchen, you plug this in every time you go to clean the model, put this in the primary bedroom. And it was great. But I remember the initial pushback was, well, we went to the builder show and someone shared a stat that only 2% of the purchasing decision is based on smell, and like all these other parts are way more important. I said,
yeah, of course.
That might be in the positive direction, only 2%. But if the model home smells like a dirty diaper, I'm telling you, the impact is way higher than 2%. It's like, get me the heck out of this home. Same thing with leftover chai or Thai food that the salesperson reheated in the microwave for lunch. Like, negative smells are supremely negative. It's it's almost like the smell of something bad is almost a higher cue to us subconsciously to get the heck away from wherever you are than even seeing something that's kind of disturbing. You're like, okay, I can move my eyes, but I can't like move my nose. My nose has no choice. As long as I'm breathing air, I'm taking in that bad thing.
I made that joke, but not joke. You know, if a marketer's been in the seat for, let's say, 3 years or under at this point, maybe 4 years, and they haven't had sitting inventory homes and they're not touring those homes, they're not going to know that the pee trap dries up, which means the scent of the sewer comes in through that house. So even if you are sending people in and all of a sudden you're like, I don't understand why the traffic is like no one's converting and your sales team is maybe not that attuned to recommendations, you might not know that the house smells like a sewer. So there, you're right. Like absurdly. And then they're going to think there's clearly something wrong, even though you just need to put some more water in the back of the toilet bowl. So
okay, I have another question about the picture you posted with the home that was in framing. Were they also putting that smell in homes that were by that builder in framing?
That was not. And that was actually an interesting one. I toured that house and I went with my sister-in-law, who refused to go into that house until I found her a path, because there were too many nails on the gravel walkway. And she was like, I knew what I was getting myself into, but I didn't know that I have an opportunity to put a hole in my shoe today and I'm not walking in there. And it even seemed to me like maybe you should have sent someone to go pick up the nails, because that was an experience immediately. She's like, I'm out. So I walked the path before her, went in the house.
That's,
and then
interesting,
the house
because
itself was clean.
You know, if you're in the industry, that would be a really hard one to be aware of on your own, because then you'd never go anywhere.
Yeah.
But like it's just one of those things where I like to think that I could put myself in someone else's shoes as part of what any good marketer has to do, but that one would be tough to catch and be like, unless it was a giant pile, but I'm talking just like random nails.
It was a lot of nails. It was too many nails, like a strip of nails.
Okay. So the last thing I want to talk about quickly is the extreme ways that we could take this good insight that you shared and attack it. Cause I think this is also, there's so many times where we talk to marketers or leaders of any kind. They're like, my owner, whoever, is such a, they're a dumb beepity beep, 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 because they wouldn't let me do the smell thing. And I believe it's important and whatever. Again, that's like Glade plugin on one side.
That's easy.
And like turnkey service that uses hotelsmell.com, whatever, diffusers, giant, you know, exotic smell. There's so many different ways to do this. And so just be cognizant. I know this is like over explaining something, but you do not have to just Google like curated smells.
Yeah. Certain. This doesn't need to be like a crazy strategy. It's more, okay, our houses don't stink. Got it. And again, I think the bigger story that comes out of that is, yeah, the more national builder who had a better experience was not the one who asked me my contact information. It was a small guy. It was the builder who was really trying to make it. So that, again, is always going to be your takeaway of, yeah, like they can think about these details, but they are not having as good of a follow-up process of you. So you are going to crush them each time if you keep that market share and that rate of response up and thoughtfulness.
Yeah, that reminds me of the brand equity pyramid. You know, anyone can run an ad. It's the broad thing at the bottom. Anyone can do that. But as you go up the pyramid, it requires better and better organizational excellence, because at the top, which is the hardest, is the individual. So as a corporation, you could have a turnkey service that plugs all these things in and make sure that they're on and smells appropriately, but you can't make that person, you know, yet until we have the neural link. We can just put in all, maybe that's what we're going to do with salespeople and sales managers. Ultimately is have like a neural link somehow that is like, you didn't follow up with that person in the CRM, you get shocked or something. But that's why everyone has a chance, because you, if you can get the individual team members on your team to buy in and do what they need to do, you can certainly still outperform.
Yeah. And get people excited. Like Julie was saying, just get them. Yeah. Like the small guy was like telling me how excited they were. They didn't even have a model home. They were more pumped about, they just had a tent in the rain. And they're just like, oh man, let me tell you what we're building. And their excitement was infectious. And then I tore these other homes and I'm like, where are the people I'm supposed to be talking to? So very interesting. Yeah.
So my story time will continue on a little bit more into the Builder 100 and specifically mergers, acquisitions, like consolidation. Small builders have to continue to differentiate in what they do and how they do it, not just in land position, because one of the folks who spoke on stage was talking about they're facilitating just this one organization, like 1 to 2 builders a month being sold to a larger builder. And they think that that's going to continue for about the next 2 years. So, you know, like even this goes back to the smell thing. Thinking about things for your customers is a service. Curation is a service. It's making thoughtful decisions in advance about what is best, best serves the customer. So that was one thing that was interesting to hear. The other was a stat that Karen Bonder from Zonda Livable shared, where I think they surveyed 3,000 or 4,000 consumers and asked them if you could have these nice things like extra perks from a home builder or have a buyer's agent work with you, which would you rather have? And the majority said we'd rather have the things from the builder. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, their research and insight is saying, hey, not that realtors have no place at all, but that most builders still are outsourcing things that they don't need to outsource. And I think the hint here was that livable.com, their syndication platform, as well as New Home Source, is a place where they can start telling that story. So this is like a service to the industry in the sense that you're on this website that has lots of different new home construction stuff. If the messaging on there says essentially like, if you don't have an agent, check this box and we'll make sure the builder knows so you can get whatever additional perks that come from that. I thought that was really interesting. And then the, Julie, did you have something you want to say about that?
Well, I was going to say on that, it was interesting you said that because we haven't talked about this. I just had a builder asking me, how do we do messaging and tell people that you don't necessarily need a realtor without saying out to the world, you don't need a realtor. Like we've got you, we're taking care of you. So it was a lot. We had a whole conversation about different ways to convey, like, we're your expert. We've got you. We can walk you through it without being like no realtors, because they will work with a realtor. There's just no reason they necessarily need one. So that I do think that's a topic that we're going to start hearing more and more.
I also think as a buyer, it's one of those things where you're like, well, that's the way it's always been done. So that's the way I know it should be done. So they do kind of need to be, you're right, Julie, like overly explained in kind ways, but also there's the fine line of not upsetting agents who you want to have long-term relationships with that are producing. So there's that balance.
Yep. The most exciting thing, I don't believe they gave an exact date of when this is going to be in effect, was Jeff, the CEO of Zonda, gave an example of a new price tool that they're going to be rolling out that uses machine learning. And essentially, it's going to do 3 different layers of pricing recommendations: floor plan level, competitive market analysis, looking at distance from the subject property, lot size, unit size, bedroom count, bathroom count, and garage count. As kind of the initial first layer. And then the next layer is base price prediction. So market-based pricing, comparing comps on 5 variables: lot size, unit size, bedroom count, bathroom count, and garage count. And then finally, the last piece is lot premium pricing based upon lot size, backing to open space, corner lot, cul-de-sac, and cul-de-sac street, backs to primary road, adjacent undesirable land usage, et cetera. Now, I think the really cool thing about this is I thought it was really smart that they, again, how much of the audience this translates to, but it was, hey, this is a recommended starting point. You could go in and adjust those recommendations. And I think they kind of hinted that it would stay. So if you think, no, that home site is worth 8,000 and it's only recommending 3, or you think it's worth 8 and it's recommending 20. So you can override it and it will learn based upon the adjustments you make. But as a starting point, my experience generally, when I go out to visit builders and we talk, especially around community launches, how are you setting pricing on home site premiums and pricing generally? It's kind of a, you know, it's a feeling, it's a stick your finger in the wind and
they're winging it.
Yeah. And this at least serves as a starting point. So, you know, all, well, at least for Julie and I, our kids are of the age where they're probably at least thinking about using ChatGPT to help them with their homework. Mm-hmm. And I think this is going to become a tool for corporate teams, divisional leadership to get some of their homework done for them, where it reduces the friction of starting from nothing. And at least it's a starting point. So the scenario that I, fictitious scenario that I have is you go out to walk the home sites with your sales manager to set the premiums and you're the division president and you're running around doing a million things. So you might not have time to do all of your prep work. So you just pull up the Zonda app, you go to Homesite 101 and the sales manager says, well, you know, everything we're looking at here, I think this should be a $5,000 Homesite premium scenario. And I just can see the division president being like, oh, okay. I think 20,000, like they're looking at their phone or their iPad and they're getting the number from Zonda and they're using that as kind of the pushback to then have a discussion mediated of where it should really be. But especially when things are selling quickly, Jeff made the argument and I agree, builders do not respond fast enough. Mm-hmm. They tend to respond, well, even on the downside, they don't really oftentimes respond fast enough for other reasons, but across the board price increases, we've said this for almost a decade now, that's a sign of laziness. It should never be done. So I just thought that was probably my number one, like, oh, this is cool. When's it coming out? When can builders start playing with it? Because even as a marketer, could you imagine just having another set of eyes?
Well, I was going to say, yeah, the amount of marketers who get tasked or asked to give their additional feedback too. And sometimes they're like, well, I don't have a benchmark exactly. And so Julie's right. Like, oh, we might be a little winging it. So at least if they're utilizing the tool or have additional feedback, you know, there's a good starting at point to not blow it out of the water too negatively or too positively where you can't pivot fast enough. So.
Yep. All right. First up, McDonald's is making a massive investment in digital marketing. This is from restaurantbusinessonline.com.
Very interesting source.
Yeah. And the reason I pulled this up here is because obviously we all know McDonald's does a lot of advertising. And I thought the process they went through here was really interesting in that it says McDonald's is planning to invest hundreds of millions of dollars to upgrade its digital marketing capabilities over the coming years. The first thing that made me think of was a data point that one of the speakers shared at the Builder 100 that we know to be true. In fact, I would say it's probably higher in our industry, is that across all industries, the number was 25% roughly of all ad spend goes to not reaching their customers, but to quote unquote, target them better, more precisely, to pay basically platform fees or agency fees, and those agency fees being hidden. And like we just talked earlier this morning about someone who's Mike and I did, we're talking with, and they're like, well, we spend $3,000 a month on Google. Like, okay, is that $3,000 of actual ads or $3,000 of like fees and everything else? And they're like, you know what? We actually don't even know how that works. Probably is. It's not broken out. So the first thing I thought is, okay, is this going to be an article about McDonald's like overpaying to try to tell people that, you know, to recommend one extra slice of cheese and like this prediction method? I just, you know, big companies, I'm always like, they don't always make the best choices. But what I thought was really interesting is the way they're setting this up is that instead of pulling money away from their traditional, it's going to be based upon the sales that come through their own digital platform. So when you use the McDonald's app to order, or I don't know, I guess you maybe use the website, but whatever, if digital channel sales are going to drive digital ad spend. And that made sense to me because I think it's a good protection for them. This is just like, have fun thinking about being a marketer in an industry that's not ours is a good kind of brain game to play. It's going to, as digital sales increase, the resources to communicate to the digital audiences and to improve those experiences. So I think it's a good way to keep themselves from getting further out of touch potentially, mm-hmm. because it's tracked to revenue. I just thought that was an interesting approach.
I also think it's interesting how much A/B testing you would be able to actually do. Because like a billboard, then did they order that burger that was on the billboard? You know, that doesn't work. But like if you could get so specific to what they're seeing in the advertising to what they're actually then ordering from that ad would be fascinating. Like how much data they could gather about that would be interesting.
And I have been seeing, I don't eat out a lot, but I went to Chick-fil-A like 2 times in the last 2 weeks, which is more than I went last year. And one of the drive, you know, ways areas was, oh, if you have a mobile order, and there were less people in there, but it was also being like, you can have a faster experience if you do mm-hmm. that. And you're right too, Julie. I think it's one of those things of, the same way Spotify figured out their strategy as if you like this, you specifically will probably like this song. So if you always order a chicken sandwich, you will probably like this new chicken sandwich. And then they can experiment earlier with those people before they even roll out or, and with that data, they can utilize it, I think, better. So, and I think it's also protecting them with the first party data changes by collecting.
Yeah, the amount of data that they get. I mean, that's mm-hmm. again, why every loyalty program exists. It's not yep. just to give you a discount on your next purchase. It's to be able to track all of the information. So anyway, I just thought it was interesting to see, you know, when I thought about it, I was like, you know what? I don't see much for McDonald's outside of traditional advertising, billboards, et cetera. I know they've had an app and they've pushed that heavily, but, and actually they have more people who use the app than Starbucks uses their app, which I thought was also interesting to hear.
I get their advertising on Reddit because Reddit, usually I was looking at like healthy eating stuff and it kept serving me McDonald's ads. And I was like, no.
Oh my gosh.
That's funny.
That's pretty funny. Again, like, well, we generate all these clicks on our healthy ads. Aren't we smart? But what's the chances, Julie, that you're ever going to be confused that eating at McDonald's is healthy?
No, never. Never.
All right. Next up from housingwire.com, home prices grew in 93% of markets in Q1, according to the National Association of Realtors, and 8 of the 10 most expensive markets in the U.S. were located in California.
Shocking.
Yeah. I think that comes with the question we hear in a lot of calls is what are the incentives looking like? What are the prices looking like? What are the other builders doing? And just having that aggregated data of, yeah, most of them are still moving up. Definitely makes people feel justified to their decision.
That reminds me, it was a point, I think, that Allie Wolf, and she actually is messaging me right now on Twitter. That's funny. Hey Allie. She was saying, hey, even though we've got these tools to make our homes more affordable, right now renovations are down. Mm-hmm. Material prices in a lot of cases are down. There's labor pressure and then land pressure that's going to just continue to make new homes less and less affordable. Kind of almost, you can just see it no matter what. So kind of goes along with yesterday, someone was asking, when is a consumer, not a builder, when are rates going to drop? And I was like, well, when are prices going to drop? You have to ask those two things together, because most likely rates go down a little bit, prices are going to go up almost in kind. I remember when the pandemic first hit, having to explain to owners and division presidents, like, you should be raising prices faster. I'm like, what do you mean? I go, because it's just keep the same monthly payment and raise the price. Like, you were selling homes at that payment before. You don't have to give it away. And it took people, 6-8 months to really get to that point. And I don't think they're going to remember that lesson really quick.
Yeah.
Because of the pain of cost rising down the supply chain too. So if prices aren't going to come down, then affordability is going to continue to be a problem. Next up from Zillow, 44% of adults would buy their childhood home today if they could afford it.
If that's a big if.
Right.
We had a fun moment in our Do You Convert Slack channel where we all just started slacking our childhood homes, and most of us agreed, like, yeah, I would buy it. I think Andrew won by a landslide with his like grandparents' waterfront, oceanfront property now being $4 million. He's like, yep, that's out of our price range.
Yeah.
But it was definitely interesting that at least.
Children of the 1980s and 1990s are the most likely to say that they would buy their childhood home today, 62% and 55% respectively. I have all the houses I've ever lived in saved on Zillow to watch, but the only one that I would really be interested in purchasing is my childhood home. And I've said this for, I mean, back even when I made no money, I was like, one day I'd love to go buy that house just so that between renters, I can go back in and just like be nostalgic for a couple hours. My parents lived in the same house for 31 years. So it was like one of those things where I went to college and surprise, we're in a different house. I'm like, what? I thought this was like forever. I didn't realize that most people moved all the time.
I think I made a joke where I was like, my parents still live in their first home for 36 years. So they don't want roomies. So it's not happening.
Yeah.
But yeah. It's a fun game to play, seeing everybody's childhood. Mine's not on there because it was in a tiny town. But there is a house for sale in my tiny town right now for $59,000.
Wow.
So I would not love my hometown, but I'm not ready to move back there.
Yeah, I think the connection to everybody on this is one, go look up your childhood home and just see if there are pictures on there. You can re-experience it. It surprises my family members when I would pull it up at a family event and I'd be like, look, this is, you know, they haven't really changed anything the last time they tried to sell it, except for the furniture. But also just, again, the power of nostalgia and knowing that the millennials and Gen Z and Gen X are such a force, and even boomers, of course, utilizing that, that messaging and some of those vibes in your ads and website can be important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nostalgia. There's no tracking tool for nostalgia. So,
Yeah, exactly. Also, like brand nostalgia, this just hit me because my wife is redecorating one of like the front sitting area in our new house. We got like an inexpensive rug and used these white things that were previously in a sunroom. We don't have a sunroom anymore. And our dog just destroyed everything, like ripped this shaggy carpet thing to heck. And so she was looking for a new rug and she got another one previously from Magnolia's website. And then she just happened to do a second search and the exact same rug was available from Wayfair for one third of the price. And she was shocked. And I was like, no, we shouldn't really be shocked in this because drop shipping, you know, like reselling things, Magnolia is not going out and sourcing 4,000 products specifically for themselves, but they are curating it again in a way that provides value to the consumer and this feeling of, ooh, what's her name? Jessica, not Jessica. Oh man, it's been too long. Starts with a J, I'm pretty sure. Anyway, the Magnolia lady.
I knew you were talking about it. Yeah.
Joanna Gaines. You know, I just thought that's again, like how much is that brand worth? In this case, it's worth 2/3 more expensive price to most people. Last up, from DigiDay, Google delays third-party cookie demise yet again. For those of you watching on video, I'm going to share. This is pretty funny. I mean, there's always funny comments about the cookie thing, but they're delaying the sunsetting of the cookie. They've got a great animated image of a chocolate chip cookie, which now makes me hungry because they got a little bit of salt on top, which means it's a good cookie. Anyway, what's the takeaway from this one?
I think it's one of those things, as you hear from builders, and they keep wanting to when the questions are, what are we doing for first party data? Remember, the first party data is your CRM system. And that's where we want to make sure we're collecting everyone. And that's where we can reach out to people from. So it's more aligned with, if you get those questions too, just understanding that you do have a process in place. It can almost always be improved or tweaked, or you know, additional resources created on your website to create more opportunities to people to fill out information, to become a lead, to capture that faster. But that is just another tool to understand. Was there anything for you, Julie?
I think just that we're not surprised, like this keeps getting pushed back over and over again. It also explains how complicated, how many things, like you pull a thread, you know, and different things start unraveling. And I think they see that there's not one easy solution for that. So a lot of times when you as a builder come and are like, what do we do? How do we fix that? You kind of just have to watch it and follow along with what's happening and be on top of it to then make changes when you can. Because right now it doesn't make sense to make any huge changes because we kind of have to wait to see what everybody's doing. So it's just one of those things.
Here's why it keeps getting pushed back. You all ready for this one? Money. That's why they're not pushing it. That's why they're pushing it back, is because they stand to lose a lot of money. It's being framed as, well, the industry still has concerns. These different industry groups have expressed concerns around different issues. So we're going to delay for make sure everyone's on the same page. No, it's because Google wants to keep making money off of having third-party cookies and companies being able to advertise based upon that information. It's a little bit like Apple. You know, Apple has an app store. It always had an app store, but the reason the app store exploded in popularity is because of all of the ads that were run on Facebook to install different apps. Anyone who created an app, the game was create an app. Yeah, put it on the app store. But in order to get awareness on the app store, you had to get on that front page. How are you getting on that front page? Because Apple pays attention. How is Apple going to pay attention? Because you're going to spend hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars on Facebook saying, come check out this cool app, Candy Crush, and then get a bunch of people to download it. And then it's going to get on the front page. And then the cycle continues. And so when Apple took away all this additional information for the sake of privacy, it's kind of this symbiotic relationship that even Apple maybe didn't fully understand of they were making money because of Meta. And then they cut it off, and it does decline the amount of discovery on the App Store. I think the same thing, Google has an understanding of if we shut this off the wrong way, we're going to make less money, and they don't like that. So until they figure out how to keep revenue high, shockingly, they're not going to be overly concerned about privacy.
Mm-hmm. As long as anyone comes near them who's like, it's a big deal, they're like, we're working on it soon. We have a plan eventually. So they have answers for it.
Also, it's kind of ironic when Apple made that change, it was like, they're going to screw Meta. And now, and we did see the ad quality degrade for a long time, but now they're back because of large language models and the use of AI to ad target. And they have more data on their users. So it's almost like Apple helped create this moat that now no one else can get to, because Meta already had a decade of having all this data on people to pull from for the AI to use. So fun times. All right. Things we love, things we hate. The thing we're always the least prepared for on every episode of Market Proof Marketing. What do you all got?
Do you want to go, Julie?
Sure. So much fun if you've never done it before. So my 10-year-old decided he wanted to like a playlist, a Spotify playlist.
Oh, wow.
So if you have little ones, make a playlist with them because it's hilarious. And you'll learn a lot about them. This is all like musical songs from Hamilton and different musicals. And then I taught him how to add more music. And so he comes and shows me what he's added on there, and it's been more fun. So if you have little ones, go make them a Spotify playlist. It's entertaining.
That's very cute. Mine, I feel like I only have like work stuff. Mine was, I had a builder, I posted already about it, but asked me a question about email marketing. And I was like, let me go see what's out there for a good resource for you. And I attended the HubSpot Email Marketing Academy. And it was good. I thought it had some good takeaways. And it's one of those things that even a builder, it's like, hey, we want a bunch of educated agents or other people. And we talked about, I think on the live episode, is like, maybe create your own academy to level people up so you can have those higher level conversations. And so instead of me having to overly explain a lot of things, sometimes I can be like, hey, empower yourself. Here's this. And good luck.
That's free.
And it's free. Yeah.
Now it's not free because they want to inception style in your brain and say,
the last one was like, well, this course is optional, but let's talk about HubSpot. I was like, nope.
Yeah.
That was the one I asked about. Yeah. How about you, Kev?
My favorite thing is, I mean, who doesn't love gifts? But I got the most like unique gift I've ever had. Like this giant box shows up and I still don't know. Please, everyone, do send me gifts. I like that. But include something that explains what's going on here. Because check this out. I have a three-part Darth Vader head thing. It's okay. Got like this thing you snap on your neck, and then it makes breathing noises. It's like this whole, it's got a stand. So I don't know if I offended somebody and they think I'm like a dark lord of the Sith when it comes to marketing. I don't know if this means like, I don't know what it means.
When you posted a picture, I thought it was like a little miniature.
So
you have a next Halloween costume for like 20 years.
I guess at this year's summit, I'm going to come out on stage as Darth Vader, but
Instagram.
For the love of everyone, write a note to let me know what's going on. Cause it said my name. None of my kids ordered anything. It's not their birthdays. So I don't know what to do with this, but I love it. I do like Star Wars. I mean, I don't know. Maybe someone thinks I need a new backdrop thing.
Look pretty cool.
That's a cool gift.
Did we all go? Yeah, we all went.
Yeah, we are all good.
Okay. Well, then that'll do it for this week. We'll see you next time, everybody.
See ya.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us on another episode of Market Proof Marketing. Can't wait for the next one? Or looking to connect with other new home marketers? Become a member of our private community, DYC All Access, which is 100% free and always will be. Get exclusive content not shared anywhere else, access to private events, and the ability to join a marketing impact group with other marketers like you around the country. Visit our link in the show notes or members.duconvert.com to join. All opinions expressed by me, Andrew Peake, Jackie Lipinski, and our castmates are solely our own opinions. Now get to work and make sure your company is market-proof.